Welcome back to another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast, our third podcast this week, Friday morning recording, and I am joined by Jake Hollop once again, like I was on Wednesday. This time for the whole podcast, we've got a lot to get through on the A-League front and also the Socceroos front, of course, with the squad announced yesterday for the two matches against Lebanon. Jake, first of all, how are you going on this? Well, where I am, it's a cold Friday morning. I don't know how it is in Victoria, though.
Yeah, it's a little chilly as well. It's kind of caught me off guard. I've got the hoodie on for this one because of that. But no, I'm good. Enjoyed a good, you know, sort of two games last night, which we'll sort of get into a little bit later, Western United and the Mariners in their AFC Cup run. So yeah, so enjoying or excited to get started.
Yeah, I feel like that's been like a regular occurrence this season, like a double header on like a Thursday night because of the AFC Cup and or the Asian Champions League. So yeah,
I've enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice. Just 4 hours straight of football. So, although yeah, the Mariners Odisha game, which we'll get to in a moment, wasn't very memorable. All right. Let's start though, with the Western United Melbourne victory game. Just a quick, some quick thoughts on that. So, obviously a 2-2 draw. Ben Garucha pops up late to equalize for Western. Kind of felt when Victory took the lead that it was kind of this is going to happen again with Western blowing a lead and collapsing against Victory. Although that time, I mean, last time we were talking about this during the game, and you said last time they played when Damien De Silva got the late brace in crazy fashion that Victory kind of. It was kind of a reward for their effort during the game. Whereas this time, Victory really didn't do much until they scored. And then, yeah, Fellaini pops up. It would be, you know, a big goal for him, for his confidence. And then Chris Economides as well, and who's I thought was actually really good last night and kind of changed the game a little bit for them, which is surprising because, you know, we all know that, yeah, they kind of tried to offload him out on loan to Adelaide United in the January window. So a big performance for him. But what was your overall thoughts on what you saw?
Yeah, I thought probably up until the Victory's first goal in the 70th minute, they hadn't had a single shot on target. I think they had an XG of under 0.10, which is unbelievable for
They finished with 1.1 XG something. Yeah.
And I'm going up, yeah, quite nice, especially because the Fellaini goal was just simply a tap in. But yeah, point being was it was probably one of the worst performances I've seen from Victory up until the goal. I think they barely created anything. Defensively, they didn't look great. It was very, very dire. You know, they were very lucky even to go into it only being 1-0 down, especially with the Michael Roos penalty miss, which I think honestly probably was a turning point in the game. I think if you put that home, 2-0 up, I think you're heading to the last half an hour of the game. Yeah, you probably walk away with the win there. So I think that ultimately Western United not taking their chances there probably cost them the game. In that sense. So yeah, it's good for Fellaini to grab a goal. Economides, two players have sort of just been kind of phased out of the team, but popped up with some big goals, and yeah, they definitely have the ability to do that. But I think it was very good at least to see the Western United were able to pop up with that late win equaliser with Garucho. Because yeah, maybe we haven't seen that as much recently. You know, they've been a bit more, you know, they choke away some performances, but they came back, got the point at least for their efforts, but probably is a little bit late for them to, you know, really make a push for finals, which is a shame. I think you'd like to see that, especially with how, you know, I think how well they've been playing recently. I think they've been playing really well. So at least that's a, you know, a bit of a positive for West United fans, maybe going into, you know, heading into their new home stadium. The performances are looking better. They're looking like a good team. They're pretty exciting to watch. I'd say they've got some fantastic players, you know, Peña, Grimaldi, but I think both of them sort of on the two wings are exceptional to watch. So I think there's a lot of optimism, I guess, at least, you know, it's what's been such a poor season for West United. They at least look quite good now. And for Victory, yeah, I don't know. I think it's simply just trying to establish a home final, I'd say, because I'd probably say that top two's out of reach for now, especially because, yeah, the others have got a game on hand on them now. So, yeah, so I think for them, it's just probably establishing a home final because I don't think they've been awfully great recently. I don't know about you, but yeah.
No, I don't think they've been great at all. And I will say you mentioned the Roos penalty there, probably justice served with that one as well, because I didn't think it was a penalty. It just seemed really more like a coming together. Probably not the best decision by Jake Skinner, if I'm not mistaken, was the referee.
I believe so, yeah.
In the game, yeah. So, Victory, like you just can't trust this team to A, be consistent, and even when they do play well, actually take their chances. So last night was strange where they didn't play well, but they did take their chances. But then you feel like they're going to have the next game, they're going to play well, but then they're not going to take their chances. It's like this, you know. So one thing you can say about them is defensively, usually they're going to be pretty solid. Although last night, probably not so much, where I actually thought Connor Chapman was a little bit at fault for both goals. I thought on the first one, he kind of came across to help apply pressure on Grimaldi when there wasn't really any need to. I can't remember the play was in front of Grimaldi, but they already had someone there. Space for Garuccio, Grimaldi, lovely little pass, and then the cutback and Pena. I mean, then you can say there's other people at fault too, because Pena's got like a just a huge acre of space in the middle of the box to finish. And then the second one is kind of similar, where Chapman again is getting drawn centrally, and Garuccio's just got all this space. You can't. I know you're trying to defend, you know, the central area and the ball, but in that case, they're like giving way too much space near the goal for a player like Garuccio, who we know is going to get forward in those scenarios. And Weston, you mentioned there, I mentioned on the Monday pod about how like this season is kind of similar to last season, where yeah, they just started poorly and there was other issues there, like I mentioned, with a couple of players who seemed like they didn't want to be there and all that sort of stuff. Whereas this time, for whatever reason, they just didn't get reward for their performances at the start of the season, and now they are. And in guys like Grimaldi and Pena, they got two midfielders there who seem to be at the top of their game. I know how much you love Grimaldi, but Pena too, though, who has done himself no harm endearing himself to A-League fans after the game last night too, with his post-match interview with Marco Zapponi. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. But he is absolutely cooking at the moment, Daniel Pena. I mean, yeah, like everything he touched at the moment. You know, it was like earlier in the season, he'd get in those dangerous areas, but, you know, maybe he'd hit the crossbar, or maybe he's, like John Aloisi said recently, his teammates just aren't finishing. He could have had heaps more assists, for example. But now he's getting reward, and now he's contributing himself. And, yeah, I said on Monday I expected him to have a big finish to the season. It looks like we're seeing that at the moment. So, yeah. And the only other note from this game was Ryan Teague, who obviously didn't play. And Tony Popovic confirmed afterwards that he's going to be out for the Oli Roos as well. So not good for Ryan Teague. How do you think they go about, they had Brimmer started last night in that deeper role. I don't really love him there. It seems like Tony Popovic didn't love him there because he dragged him as well. I know they got Bonaventure in, but kind of looks like he's still trying to familiarize himself with the playing style and kind of the match fitness again. So how do you see that kind of shaking out of these coming weeks?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because it was quite a congested sort of position heading into the season. You know, Ryan Marchand was one as well. He's obviously gone now. I think an obvious one potentially would be moving Connor Chapman sort of into there. That's probably more his natural position rather than a right back. So maybe it's just a makeshift sort of change for now. Because, yeah, like I think simply the pivot in Brumer and Valadon, probably just a little bit too offensive. You know, both of them are probably more number 8/10 type of players. You know, there's not really a 6 among them. So I think, you know, Chapman would be one there. But obviously Bonaventure, I think just getting him to fitness would be good. We even saw Alex Menelaou, who's a young defensive midfielder. He was put on the bench, so maybe that could be something there. Probably not, let's be real. Tony Popovic. Anyways, but yeah.
Hey, Valadon got some minutes, so.
No, he did. So no, I'll just having a laugh there, but yeah, who knows? I think that, you know, Victory do have a good squad, but yeah, maybe there's a little bit of lack of an out and out 6 with obviously Teague out, and then Marchand. This would be absolutely perfect for Marchand, so that's probably very frustrating for Victory in that sense.
And even Bonaventure, like, you know, it was always more of an attacking, more of an eight. So and yeah, I mean, you say Connor Chapman. Like, yeah, he'd probably do that. Or, six. Like, yeah. Honestly, trust Popovic to probably put, like, fucking De Silva or Miranda as, like, a 6. And then, like...
Maybe Lee Broxham. Lee Broxham.
To hop back in. We forgot about Lee. Old mate Lee. Yeah. Jeez. Yes. You know, just trust Popovic to do something wild like that. Because he's just got to be conservative, doesn't he? Anyway. Last thing, actually, on Victory. So, their run home, then. They've got Perth at home. Then another Melbourne derby. That's a home one for them. They got to go to Wellington, home to Brisbane, and home to the Wanderers. So, I mean, those last two games.
It's a decent run.
Yeah, I mean, Brisbane and the Wanderers seasons could both be over at that point, maybe. So that's not too bad, and they're both at home. But the Derby and going to Wellington, those are two massive games. And they're going to probably tell us a lot about this team kind of heading into finals, particularly that Wellington game. And I know, for example, we got, seems like whenever any team goes to Wellington at the moment, it's kind of like a big litmus test for, you know, what's, how serious should we be taking them in terms of championship contention? So Sydney FC, got my eyes on you for this weekend. Mariners, Odisha. So not much to say. Mariners kind of just see how the nil or draw in India. They're through. There's a bit of beef during the game with the team managers. Don't really know what it was about. Maybe they were just like, listen, this game's so boring, let's just create some headlines at halftime. It looked like the Mariners were kind of playing in second gear, to be honest with you, the whole game. They didn't really feel the need to kind of press home their advantage. They didn't feel threatened, I thought, at all defensively. There was like one penalty shout maybe against, I think it was Nathan Paul at one point. But yeah, look, that they're just better. And to be honest with you, I'm looking broader picture, that surely the Mariners have to go on and win this thing, right? Like, is that, am I demanding too much? Yeah, and I've got, you know, based from the Asian Cup, and even before that, I've got a newfound respect for Asian football, don't get me wrong, but I mean, come on, like this, the Mariners surely are the most functional team left in the competition. They've surely got the most quality and they should be able to win this.
Yeah, I think looking next, I think a Kyrgyzstani team, I think, are the next to come up. But then I think it's a Lebanese team and an Omani team, I think, potentially.
Yeah, I'm actually, you keep talking, I'm just going to get up.
Yeah, but so I think, yeah, if you're just looking at that, you know, you probably do hope, yeah, the Mariners can get through. And yeah, they're a bloody good team. They're in great form. You know, I think the ability for them to, you know, maintain these great performances in both Asia and the league has been unbelievable. You know, top of the A-League and also, yes, marching straight through to Asia. And yeah, I thought it was a good performance for them. I think considering, yeah, look, you know, you're already 4-0 up on aggregate. Yeah, no need to probably really push yourselves. You know, Odisha didn't have a single shot all game, which is unbelievable. Surely that's a wrong statistic. That is unbelievable, not for the whole game. So I think that's absolute credit to Mariners. And I think especially the defensively, they've looked better and better every single week. You know, obviously we probably associate the Mariners with high scoring games, you know, exciting football, but defensively they've been really bloody good this season. They've been a lot better. So so I think that's something that's really, you know, to look forward to there with the Mariners. I think all the usual suspects would just look very good. Torres, Nisbet, you know, even Brad Tapps came to the team really well. So yeah, the Mariners, man, what more can you really say? They're just
a
great team.
Yeah. Yeah, we said this. We got to do like that podcast for 2 hours one day. just talking about how much we love the Mariners. No,
waxing lyrical, yes.
Yeah. Really, I've just gone and have a look at the schedule. And did you know that Marco Tilio, I believe, is the second highest scorer still in the AFC Cup?
Yeah, I saw that. Goals. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. But so they've got to go to Kyrgyzstan first. They are playing, I'm probably going to butcher this, Abdish Atakant, I think is... No, Abdish Atakant, I think it's how you say that.
Yes, yes, something like that.
So they go there first, and then they play at home. What's your thoughts on that? Because I felt actually in this tie against Odisha that it actually suited them playing home first, because you could basically just smash them at home first, and then it kind of makes the away leg redundant. Whereas this time, I don't know how many fans and how well followed this Kyrgyzstani team is, but if they go there hostile, maybe it's tricky, and then if... let's say they only win 2-1, or let's say it's a 1-1 draw, even something like that, and then they're coming back home and there's that extra pressure. How do you see that?
Yeah, I think it's always a bit of an interesting one. I've personally sort of always gone through football and life like to preferring the away leg, just to sort of get the harder game out the way. That's just sort of how I've always sort of looked at football. But I guess in that sense, yeah, the Mariners have shown the ability to any day just turn up, go for it, smash a team 4-0, go the away leg and just sit back and chillax, you know what I mean? So I think it will be interesting. I think the Mariners, I don't know, I just have a lot of confidence in the Mariners. I think they can essentially go anywhere they want and put up a fight. They've shown that ability consistently, that they're not a team that's just going to sit back and, you know, let a team dominate them, which I really like. You know, they'll go anywhere and give their all. So I don't know. I'm excited for it. I'm looking at the times. It's I think it's 11 p.m. the games, which is, well, at least at this stage, which isn't ideal for sleep schedules and whatnot. But I'm really looking forward to it because, yeah, I think this is a real chance, you know, probably since the Wanderers, you know, for an Australian team to, yeah, get some continental success. So really, really excited. I think this is probably the closest we've been since the Wanderers, actually. I think it would be. So
Yeah.
very excited.
They got times out for those games? I thought maybe it's TBD.
Oh,
but...
yeah. I think it's just the default time they've put up for now.
Oh, yeah.
But really looking forward to that one. So I think everyone in Australia, not only, you know, Wanderers fans, but honestly for, you know, Australia's domestic standings, like if the Wanderers win this, yeah, it's going to be massive. I think probably, yeah, we're going to be pushing
if the Wanderers
sort of
win this.
Third. I don't know. I don't want to get too excited. I don't
the Mariners,
get...
the Mariners.
Oh, Mariners, that's right. Oh, the Wanderers aren't winning anything. Let's just say that.
But, the Wanderers aren't winning anything anytime soon.
Yeah, let's get that out of my vocabulary. But yeah, I think, yeah, if the Mariners do end up winning, I think it will be looking good, I think, to get that third spot sort of in Asia for the coefficient rankings. So, yeah, everyone back the Mariners. Come on.
Yeah, big time. Now, the other side of the draw, we should touch on quickly. So it's Al Ahed playing Al Nahda. Now, Al Ahed are second in the Lebanese Premier League. And then we've got Al Nahda, who are second in the Omani League. So, the A-League is better than both of those leagues. The Mariners are top of the A-League. Those teams are still near the top of their league. So, and they're in form. So, you know, whenever you're playing an informed team, it's never going to be straightforward. But I'm just, you know, looking at the picture, the expectation definitely is there for the Mariners. And I mean, you know, the opportunity to win an AFC Cup, win the minor premiership, and then maybe win the championship. I mean, yeah, it'd be unbelievable for the Mariners. I mean, it's a good time. It's a good time if you are a Mariners fan. All right, let's move on to a couple of other A-League items. So the Wanderers, first of all, there was a report in News Corp. It was yesterday or no, a couple of days ago. I think it was Wednesday, where they reported basically that, first of all, Wanderers of sporting director Eddie Bosnar came out and said that, quote, everyone's safe for the moment. And talking about just, yeah, everyone, I guess. Obviously, he's talking about Mark Rudin. But then in the report, there was rumors about Tony Popovich reportedly being reached out to by the Wanderers for next season to return when his Melbourne Victory deal expires, which expires at the end of this season. And then Patrick Cisnorbo and Ante Milicic also linked with the job. And Jean-Paul Demirani apparently will not be there next season as well. He's leaving. So all of those seemed, you know, like maybe viable rumors. Ray Gatt, who's, a very reliable former journo, actually, but he's still got some inside information. And yesterday, he kind of debunked the Popovich rumor and said there hasn't been any contact and it's unlikely there will be. How are you seeing this? Because the other kind of big thing here is that Rudin's got a three-year deal and Paul Lederer is going to have to kind of, you know, venture pretty deep in his pockets with a payout here. If they are to say sack Mark Rudin, and even if they wouldn't do it at the end of the season, like you still have 2 years left on his contract. So, it's 2 years or is it the end of 26, 27?
I think it was, yes, 3 years from there. So yeah, I think 27.
Fuck. So it's actually just over 3 years right now.
Honestly, I'm not 100% sure, but
yeah,
they've put themselves in a really, really bad position there. Like
they have.
Considering how long ago it was, which was probably a month or two ago, to immediately flip-flop on your three-year contract decision to potentially sack him. That's just terrible management. That is unbelievably bad management. I think in regards to the linked managers, obviously Popovich, maybe that's not going to happen, but yeah, I think we've probably talked about it off air. Like, you know, probably he's a very similar coach to Rudan. I think in that sense, you know, maybe not as open and, you know, sort of unpredictable.
I think he's a better coach, but I think...
No, he is, but...
That's similar sort of personality type where I think they just need someone different. I think they need, you know, someone who's more accountable, to be brutally honest with you. Like we've seen with coaches like Giancarlo Italiano, Mark Jackson, you know, the two coaches who are top of the league at the moment. So there's that. I don't hate the Cisnorbo fit. I've kind of mentioned
like
this. Yeah, where I feel like his had the mind, and like, and I know I've just said like they kind of maybe need a different personality, and Castelnuovo's maybe similar in a sense that he has those, that he has that demanding kind of nature about him, and he will expect players to perform on a week in, week out basis. But that Wanderers squad is a little bit younger too. And I think, you know, we've seen at Melbourne City that he can work with young players, get the best out of them. And he knows how to win in this league. So whether you think, oh, listen, he had great squads at Melbourne City, this and the other, you still got to be able to, you know, execute with that squad. So, and you know, he did it in a way which was pretty impressive, I think, with the way they played. Now, the Wanderers don't have that same ecosystem. If he was to go in there, would he be able to, you know, create that without having that support network? I don't know. It's a risk. But I mean, what's the other option? Ante Milicic, like, really? Like, come on. Like, is that, you know, a guy who basically, yeah, kind of has gone to Croatia and it doesn't really have an interest, it seems, in kind of returning to the A-League. That was surprising. It maybe just felt like that was chucked in there as an extra name. I wouldn't think there's a lot to that. So how do you see those other two candidates potentially?
Yeah.
Those rumored candidates.
Well, I like Castelnuovo a lot. I think he did an unbelievable job with Melbourne City. I think it was very underrated, sort of how he was. Yeah, people will look at the resources, the assets, but I think compare the next two managers that took over in Vidasic and now Vidmar, and sort of look how they're sort of doing. You know, obviously they're still, you know, I think Vidmar's done all right, but you know, I think, you know, compared to the way that Castelnuovo was able, yeah, take this team to by far the best team in the league. Yeah, I think since that team, I don't think we've seen anyone sort of be that dominant in the league for the past season or two. So I think that's to him. Obviously, probably wouldn't have the same sort of resources and assets at the Wanderers, you know, simply enough. But I don't know. I think he's proven to be a good coach. Maybe not quite ready for that European move, which we saw when he went to Tours. But I think come back, sort of, you know, build his confidence again, sort of build up and maybe move, you know, push back for another move. Who knows? I don't know sort of what his aspirations or plans are. But I think the Wanderers would be a great move for him, at least for now. I don't know if that City job will be coming back. Who knows? But I think Castelnuovo should be, for any team, their number one sort of available coach right now, seeing he's done. I don't know. I think looking domestically in available coaches, who has a better track record than Paddy Castelnuovo? I don't know. For me, he probably should be, you know, sort of the most demand coach. But ultimately, it'll be another question in terms of what the Wanderers will do, because, yeah, like maybe he demands a lot of money, and the amount of money they're going to be throwing to, you know, get Rudan off contract, maybe they don't have that. So I don't know. It's honestly, it's a terrible situation at the moment for the Wanderers. But yeah, I guess there could be some optimism in terms of some potential coaches. Cause yeah, I think like you were talking about with Milicic, I just don't really see that one either. It just seems a bit random. I don't know. I saw another list of names linked. I think it was, you know, some NPL coaches in New South Wales. Well, not maybe they go that way, but I don't know. I'm just going to sit back and watch what the hell is going to unfold at the Wanderers, because it is very unpredictable at the moment.
Yeah. The only thing with the Castelnuovo part of it too is, if Vidmar doesn't stay on, our City just going to look to, hey, Paddy, come back.
Yeah.
You know, back with open arms. They've already got Vidmar's assistant right now was Castelnuovo's assistant when he was there. And yeah, it kind of feels like that might be the way that goes too. So I don't know, there's still a lot to play out. Like JP as well, the assistant who, you know, gave a bunch of ridiculous answers in his post-match press conference after the City game on Tuesday. Him leaving as well at the end of the season is kind of interesting, because if I'm not mistaken, someone was telling me yesterday that Rudan brought him in back to the club to be the assistant. And then it's kind of like, you know, he's like, has he had enough? Like, has even he had enough of Rudan? Like, it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's not good. Seems very toxic. There's been some rumors flying around on the Twitter sphere, which seem very bizarre. And wouldn't surprise me if they were true, to be honest with you. So yeah, let's see how it plays out, I guess. One thing I had to ask you, because it's been kind of going around the last few days, and it was obviously, we spoke about Terry Antonis' goal on Tuesday. Best goal in A-League history for you?
Wow. I think it would have to be the McGree goal. I don't know. I think that
okay, good.
Not just the
great,
goal
great
itself,
minds think alike. Yeah.
But everything behind the goal, yeah, to take the Jets to the final, to yeah, has to be. But man, that Antonis goal, I think in terms of pure difficulty and whatnot, the Antonis goal definitely does sort of compete, because that was unbelievable. But yeah, I think it has to be the McGree goal.
Has to be the McGree Scorpion. It's the moment. It's the atmosphere. It's the instinctiveness to just kind of, I'll just Scorpion this because that's my only option. Like, and also the Ernie Merrick just sitting there not giving a shit that his players just scored the Scorpion, who we'll talk about actually in a moment with the Socceroos stuff. But yeah, good. Good, we're in agreement. It's a McGree goal.
You have to be.
Yeah.
You have to be.
All right.
I do think the Antonis goal has potential in the Marco Rudan just sitting there and laughing factor, because that does have
that element to it. That does.
With Terry Antonis throwing up the phone number and Rudan laughing at that is actually very elite. So I think that adds extra points to the goal. But yeah, I think it has to be top five. I think it would have to be top five. But
yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. It has to be top five. There's like Orlando Aguilar's goal too.
Yeah, I'm thinking Timmy Cahill's.
One that actually gets lost in this, which was unbelievable at the time, was Marcos Flores' goal for Adelaide against Newcastle.
I don't remember.
It's 2010 range. And it's probably the best goal he scored for Adelaide United, which I always remember as an unbelievable goal. I don't think it's maybe up there, but it's kind of solo run. Tarek Elrich goal, solo run for Adelaide against Melbourne City a few years ago. That's in there. So there's a lot of options. All right. Auckland FC, just some brief thoughts on them, because, and now we know it's Auckland FC, which I was telling you guys yesterday. Auckland FC, AFC Bournemouth. Bill Foley obviously owns AFC Bournemouth, so there's a little bit of a synergy, I guess, there between the two clubs. Thoughts on the kit? Looked a little bit like an Inter Milan reject kit, but no, I liked it. It looks good. Logo, I'm not too sure about. And I don't know what's going on with their... I actually saw it this morning that they had their AKL football Twitter account, but now they've started a new one, which is... Yeah. And I hope that's not because... I saw someone comment. I agree. I hope that's not because they've... Yeah. Like, forgot their password or something. And then we've got the Knicks admin commenting under... A post sharing the kit with a vomit emoji. Love that. And to add even more fuel, the Auckland CEO, new CEO, I think, has gone there from Melbourne City, if I'm not mistaken, Nick Becker. And he came out and said, we're building a team that will be the number one football club in New Zealand. So this is great. Like, everyone's embracing this rivalry. It's going to happen. You can't really ask for much more with... Auckland, Wellington, New Derby, and then you've got a nice kit there as well with Auckland. So far for them, so good. I think Corrigan came out and said that they've signed something like seven players or nine players. Nine players, and I think seven of them were Kiwis, I think you said. And obviously they're still working around the clock with that, which, I mean, that's kind of my point. I was talking with Paletti, obviously, about Canberra on Wednesday, and it's like Auckland only have nine players signed up. And, you know, next season will start in October, right? So that's 7 months away. Like, and they're still working around the clock to make sure they're ready. And meanwhile in Canberra, like, God knows what's going on there. So, what's your overall thoughts on Auckland?
Yeah, so initially I looked at the kit and it just reminded me so much of the white and gold / blue and black dress incident. I don't know why. It as soon as I saw it, it would just reminded me of that. So... initially turned me off, but I was like, you know what, I don't mind the colors, it's pretty good. But I think the thing was the logo. I think maybe a little bit more white to the logo would be nice. I think it just kind of fades into the black and blueness of the top. So I don't know, I don't love it on the jersey, but I don't mind it by itself, if that makes sense.
Judo graphic designer on here to give us some external thoughts on the logo design.
instead of just our vibes, like, yeah, nah, it just doesn't really work. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a lot of optimism at the moment with Auckland. I think they've worked very well. I think Corica, maybe you can have some sort of doubts about, oh, is he the best coach, why not? But look, he has a proven track record in the A-League, so I don't mind that. And some of the names...
Yeah, I do have doubts, but let's wait until they actually start kicking a football.
it's not a bad first coach. That's my point. Like, they could have done worse, so I don't mind that. But and I think some of the names they've been linked to has been very, very impressive. You know, I don't know if the rumors to be believed, but Brimmer, McLaren, even seen Fornaroli's name thrown around, which would be unbelievable.
Really? Some of the, has that been thrown out there?
Yeah, wow, I've even seen Fornaroli. I don't know how true that is. Even Luke Braddon too. I think just a lot of, very well-established A-League names. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to look forward to with Auckland, especially if they can bring in some good New Zealand talents too. So, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see. I think it would be very good and very needed to have a bit more of a rivalry. You know, we had the distance derby between Wellington and Perth. You know, is that the most, I don't know, fierce derby? I don't know. So I think getting another New Zealand.
I love how Perth's like the third wheel in this as well, because now Perth are like, okay, so now Auckland's our new distance derby. Are the Knicks going to get jealous of that too? I'm not sure.
Yeah, We need to get a rivalry for Perth, like a proper one, man. Because the distance derby, especially now, the fact that it can just simply change.
Well,
like
they got the Zankovic derby now. Hopefully, if he stays a prisoner next season, then they still got that. They got the Collar Zankovic, beef derby, Giordano Colli.
That was a good game too. Yeah, that Brisbane Perth game was a very good game too. So I guess that's probably the new one now. But yeah, I don't know. I think especially for New Zealand fans, I think it's fantastic for them. I think for Aussies too. I think we've seen in the past Wellington have helped out. Us. They've developed a lot of very solid Aussie players. So hopefully Auckland can do the same too. So it's sort of a win-win for the league. And I think I was thinking about it too. Like, is there a regulation for, or maybe now Auckland too, in terms of you need a certain amount of Aussie players, because in terms of to get it to where it can sort of benefit the league too, I don't think there is there?
I don't believe so. I don't believe the Knicks have that.
Yeah,
but I haven't checked myself. Can't really comment on that.
I feel like there should be a thing where it's like maybe they have to have at least one Aussie in the match day squad, just like at least that.
Really? Okay.
So, I don't know. I feel like, if you're going to be playing in the A-League, you should at least have... It should be at least benefiting Australian football to some extent. I'm not saying your whole team has to be Aussie.
This is controversial. There's New Zealand bidders who are going to come in the comments and ratio you.
Look, we've seen it happen anyways with Wellington. They usually have at least a couple Aussies in their team, which is great. And usually younger ones too, which has been really, really good. Nick Pennington and Al Tay, for example, this season have done well. But I don't know. I think maybe it should be something written in stone saying you should at least have one Australian playing or something. I don't know.
I haven't delved deeper into it, but it seems like they are going to be focusing a lot on developing New Zealand talent just based on their comments so far and stuff. But dare I say, like we say with every club in the A-League, you should be recruiting the best that you can and getting a squad on the park that is as good as possible. And if that means, recruiting younger Aussie players they can develop, then by all means you should. I mean, thing is, for Aussie players, the good thing about this is it's just another professional pathway. And if you're willing to move to Auckland and play there and be with that team, then why not? And obviously, Corrigan's got the connections, obviously, in kind of New South Wales and stuff and probably elsewhere. So there will definitely be some Australian players in that squad. I'd be shocked if there wasn't. So, all right. I was also just mentioned, like, Wellington, Auckland, first derby, like, we will be there. We'll be there. Yeah.
I'm very excited for it. It's going to be great.
All right.
And it'll also be interesting because I know, Wellington have really sort of looked hard to lock in some of their great young sort of, New Zealand talents. So it's going to be very interesting now because, Wellington don't sort of have a sole monopoly on the New Zealand market. So I think it's going to be really interesting and honestly really good for New Zealand football in terms of, another professional pathway for them because, at the moment it's just been Wellington and they've worked hard. They've, I think, signed a lot of their best young players on long-term deals. So, it'll be interesting to see, for some of the others that maybe we haven't heard about yet. At least in Australian context, some great young players because we've seen it. With Wellington this season, there's a lot of talent in New Zealand. It's probably too a lot we haven't even seen. So I think that's another aspect to it too. That'll be good.
Yeah, big time. All right, Socceroos squad. Let's talk about that. So you have a lot of thoughts about it. It's a very interesting squad. So. some stuff which kind of stuck out to me. So Brandon Borello is still in the squad. Interesting. That felt to me like maybe he was, Arnie was almost doing him a solid because he missed out of the Asian Cup through injury. So he's like, all right, I'll give you a chance now against two games that we should be winning. Not sure about that. But then Patrick Gazbeck is in. Adam Taggart's obviously back. Adam Drustic is back. Josh Nisbet, hard done by, probably. I mean, just in a straight kind of Nisbet or Gazbeck, probably I'm taking Nisbet, particularly when Gazbeck is not playing at the moment because the Norwegian League has not started. So, okay. And also, which I think you mentioned to me yesterday, there are six strikers in this squad. And Australia only play with one. So, interesting. Like, with all due respect to someone like John Iredale, it's like, what's the point of giving a spot to him if, like, he's... Like, I can already tell you now, he's not going to play a minute. Like, I'd be shocked. Maybe if we're, like, 6-0 up in one of the games, yeah, he'd probably come off, kind of come on and get 5 minutes. But it's like, I don't really understand giving a spot for him there. Some other points. Lewis Miller, keep an eye on whether he withdraws because he picked up an injury, in his last game for Hibs. Callum Neuwendorf would have been picked, probably, if not for injury too. So maybe he would have taken that Gazbeck spot instead. And maybe Neuwendorf versus Nisbet is more of a harder kind of argument for Nisbet. And, you know, Bruno's still in there, which, some people are kind of questioning because if you're looking now long-term, is there a need for kind of a more win-now type player like Bruno Fornaroli? Jacob Farrell, was he hard done by? Who knows? He could be in the same kind of conversation as Nisbet there. We were talking on Wednesday about how Paige wasn't going to be in the squad and how that kind of opened the spot up. It seemed to me like he's kind of said, well, Kyle Rowles can kind of play as a left back if need be. So, or maybe Cameron Burgess, you know, if need be too. So, you know, what's the point of taking another left back? But it's kind of like, well, yeah, but you're playing Lebanon in two games at home. So remember, both games are at home. So I know... Yeah, the second one's their home game, but yeah, it's in Canberra. So you can kind of just take more risk with this. Other things, Arnold came out in an article in the Sydney Morning Herald where he spoke about Alessandro Cicciati not being in the squad. And he mentioned how him, Christian Volpato, are being put under pressure by their clubs to not play for Australia, which is really interesting. But then another part to this was, you know, he didn't mention any other players specifically apart from Cicciati and Volpato, which made me think, like, look, I'm sure there are other players in Europe who maybe get pressured not to, you know, not to go with their national teams. But mentioning the two that are in Italy kind of seems, you know, important here. And it kind of suggested to me, like, are the Italian FA having some sort of involvement in this? Like, are they kind of telling, you know, Parma or Sassuolo, like, listen, don't let these guys go because we've got these guys in mind for the national team in future. We don't want them to get capped. Like, just a conspiracy theory. But, you know, there just seems to be something there with these two players specifically and it not, well, no other players being mentioned, which kind of led me to believe is there something bigger going on there. But the whole Cicciati thing is kind of really bizarre because now it seems like he might not go to the Olympics if the Oli Roos were to make it, for example, which is really disappointing. So that's all of my thoughts on the squad. What about you?
Yeah, so first I'll sort of get onto the actual squad itself. So I think there's debates to be had in terms of selection-wise, like, oh, this player should have gone ahead of this player, like, in the same position. But I think my thing was structurally, like, I think, like we mentioned, you know, we've seen, okay, maybe Arnie changes it and maybe he goes for more just a 4-4-2 sort of shape. We haven't really seen that before, so I'm not sure if he will. But let's say he does. Even then, six strikers for just two positions seems a little extreme, considering the fact that, okay, a left back, for example, you only have Jordan Boss, and even there, you only really have two out-and-out wingers, so maybe you want to see Jordan Boss on the wing too. Then you have a little natural left back. Then you're moving Kyle Rowles out of position. It's just like, what? Okay, you can avoid all this where you have three natural right backs in the team right now, Atkinson, Jones, and Miller. why do you need three right backs for one position?
Yeah.
That's a very random. So yeah, I think I would have taken, you know, a left back considering the fact, yes, Jordan Boss can play further forward. So I think, yeah, I was even thinking Ben Garucho, for example. Why not? You know, he's been good in the A-League.
Interesting.
Why not? Yeah, just bring him in as a backup. You know, if you want to move Jordan Boss further forward, he's been playing well. You know, obviously I probably would have taken Farrell, but he's with the Oliveros. Maybe you don't want to promote him. I don't know. Even I don't know. Yeah, like I think we mentioned before, Iredale as well. He's been good. Davidson, who knows? Someone else. I think just someone simply.
Yeah, that's Jack Iredale. Yep.
Yeah, it's Jack Iredale with Bolton. He's been a good player. So I don't know. So I think that was the first one there. Then I think the obvious one is Pat Yazbek. I don't really get that one there. He's already part of the Oli Roo setup. Just maybe let him play there. You can promote someone like a Nisbet. But I was even saying, okay, maybe, you know, you don't really see Nisbet as a number six if you're Graham Arnold. Maybe as a number 10, you see him more. So you want to bring someone else in. I was even thinking his teammate, Max Ballard, for example. I think he's been excellent this season.
Yeah, you said this yesterday and my eyebrows, like, came off.
I'm thinking there, he's, you know, 23 years old, I think, still got a lot of upside to him. And I think looking around, like at least players that are available, because, you know, especially the likes of Devlin, Jonro, Nieuwenhof, all injured, I think it opens a spot for maybe someone like him. I think I think he's probably the best available that's, you know, available. So, yeah, so I probably would have had him in there. But, you know, whatever, I guess Yazbek, you know, good young player too. But then, yeah, I think the final one would have been, Nisbet. I'm really baffled why he wasn't called up.
Yeah, he really should be in there, hey, when you really look at it. I mean, let's go through. What's his starting 11 then for the first game at CommBank then? That's next Thursday night, 8 o'clock Sydney time. So
Matt Ryan.
Goals, obviously, Matt Ryan. Right back, I guess, Atkinson.
Yeah, I'd probably have Atkinson if possible. Yeah,
you think Arnie picks him over Gethin Jones? Yep.
He loves Gethin Jones, but yeah. So, they'll probably be Suter roles.
Boss left back.
Yeah.
Now, then you're going Irvine. How Arnie would probably select this. So Irvine, Backus.
I'd like to see Hrušić start, but yeah, probably not.
Yeah. It's probably McGree, you think?
Because I don't know how he's going to set up though. Like, I'm almost thinking he's going to go 4-4-2, considering the amount of strikers he's gone with.
Maybe. Yeah, that's the thing. We got to remember here. Maybe he's selected six because he actually might do something with the system. Yeah.
So I'm assuming he's going to go 4-4-2, and he'll use McGree and Metcalf as wingers rather than midfielders. But obviously, they can cover there if needed. But even
maybe more of a 4-2-2-2, basically.
Yeah. So then I'm thinking, maybe it'll probably be either McGree or Goodwin in that left sort of advanced role, and then Metcalf probably to start, or Silvera to back him up.
Yeah.
And then strikers, I honestly don't know what he's going to go for.
Yeah, well,
like Duke probably.
Yeah, but if you're doing like, if you're going to play like that with like a 4-2-2-2, I'd actually have McGree as one of the nines, weirdly, because then he can. Really?
Yeah,
because then he can drop deep and receive and almost play more like a 10, maybe behind someone like Yenge or Fornaroli, whoever it is. Because, or you could say, like, I mean, Taggart's been playing really well in a 4-4-2 formation, right, with Perth. So maybe he looks at something like that and he would say Taggart next to a Yenge or Taggart. That could work because it's kind of that big man, little man sort of combos, two strikers, which is like always a traditional kind of thing that you do in a 4-4-2. So, I don't know. I mean, to be fair, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I didn't think about that as kind of, you know, maybe he's looking to switch up system. And that's maybe why he selected so many strikers. Doesn't explain the right back thing, though. That's still...
Yeah, that's still weird.
Still bizarre.
And even just Nisbet, like just having someone to play as a number 10 or if needed. Like, you don't need six strikers
The thing, right, is... Creativity was our biggest issue at the Asian Cup.
Yeah.
And it's like Nisbet exemplifies creativity. Like, so I don't, you know, and very strange. I mean, that kind of gets me into my next thing, which is FA's chief football officer now, that's Ernie Merrick, who you might not have known since, you know, he's been in the role since I think maybe the middle of 2022, something like that. And we've barely seen him say anything for about 18 months. Now looks like he's talking. So he did an interview with Vince Agari in Sydney Morning Herald. And he had some really interesting comments about Socceroos' Asian Cup performance, which I actually think both of us agree with most of it, where, look, he said He said Graham Arnold did a marvelous job. Look, I don't think we need to kind of wax lyrical about Graham Arnold's coaching at the Asian Cup. I don't think it was that good, for example. But it is true, which is what Andy Merrick was getting at here, that Graham Arnold can only do so much with this group of players. I mean, I just mentioned it there. Like, he doesn't help himself by not bringing in maybe someone like a Nisbet, or, you know, maybe not picking more maybe aggressive lineups against teams we should beat, for example. But, you know, we simply just don't have the creativity like we had in a 2006 squad or 2010 squad. Like, you know, you look at this squad that's just been picked. Like, you're talking about guys who can actually break lines, who can create something out of nothing. It's kind of McGree, Hrustić, which is probably why Hrustić has come back in too. Maybe Metcalf, but even Metcalf hasn't really shown, I think, at this level that he can do it consistently. Maybe Silvera, but he's more of a wide player.
Goodwin's probably more of a crosser.
Who, Jordan Boss?
No, Goodwin.
Yeah, I mean, Goodwin's more of a, he's more with his deliveries. And he's more from wide areas, and that's the same with Jordan Boss. But that kind of number 10s basically is what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And even sixes that can actually be progressive in possession, which, you know, we like Aiden O'Neill, I think.
Yeah.
But he's obviously injured, for example. Bacchus is not, we saw it at the Asian Cup. I don't think he's the best as a lone six. I think he's good next to someone with Irvine. But I mean, they're both, excuse me, kind of more workhorse type midfielders that suit games against South Korea, for example. But when you're playing Lebanon at home in two qualifiers, like, you want a really aggressive midfield that can, you know, look forward at every opportunity, play penetrating passes, turn the opposition around the other way. And to Arnie's defense, I just don't think we have that, you know, besides maybe someone like Aiden O'Neill in that role, for example. But
I think another aspect to it as well is the fact that, look at this current squad. There's not a single player in a top five league. That itself,
which is what Ernie Merrick mentioned. He did mention that.
So I think that's a real worry. You want players playing at the highest level, and simply we're just not having that right now. You can make an argument. Maybe a Suter or Goodwin or Ryan maybe could play a top five league, but I think if you compare to our sort of peak days. We had our whole team was basically playing at a top of the league.
Definitely starting 11 wise for sure. Yeah.
So it's progressively just got slower and slower, the Moyes disappearing and whatnot. And now you're sort of left with a squad that, look, it's a decent squad. It's a squad that can compete in Asia, but is it the best squad in Asia? No chance, simply enough. I think with Japan, especially South Korea, I think, Merrick mentioned the fact that, you have Lewis Miller, someone that's, only just sort of breaking in into Hibs' team in the Scottish Championship, coming up against, Heung Min Son, one of the best players in the world. It's like, look, there's only so much you can do. So I think I think we, ultimately have to accept that position we're in. We're not probably a dominant force, at least anymore. Obviously we weren't in Asia before, and it's simply, just developing these young players. I think that's what something, Merrick mentioned, getting the players to the point where they can play again in these top five leagues, because I just think that's honestly a really big indicator. You can have players scattered all across Europe playing, which is good, but it's taking that next step, and we haven't really had a lot of players do that yet. We have a lot of players that have the potential to do that, but we're not there yet. So I get what Merrick was saying. It is maybe a little harsh to simply expect us to just walk over Asia, because I don't think we're there yet.
No.
But it's another thing in terms of saying, wow, Graham Arnold was amazing. He did an amazing job. Because I don't think he did.
I
don't think it was amazing.
So I think, listen, this is the thing. I actually couldn't believe the criticism after the South Korea game. Like, you play that game over another 9 times and Australia winning that game. So let's all calm down, right? And what's happening here is people are just criticizing Graham Arnold because they don't like him and they just don't like his personality. It's like, listen, okay, whatever. That's your opinion. Okay. But let's talk about the coaching. And if we're talking about the coaching, when I look at coach, I see, what are you doing to get the most out of your players? Now, in big games, Graham Arnold is maximizing what he has big time.
Yeah.
When we play teams that are going to sit back, where we have to force the issue, that's where he's getting found out and he's having problems. But that wasn't the reason why the Socceroos got knocked out of the Asian Cup. Socceroos got knocked out of the Asian Cup because they didn't take their chances. So, like, I didn't really understand why people were having a go at Graham Arnold about why Australia got knocked out of the Asian Cup, because even though that we didn't look good in the group stage, we still got the results and we still scored the goals that we needed to get through, but they were unconvincing. And it's interesting because we go into like two games against Lebanon now, and look, we should win and stuff, but like, I'm not expecting convincing performances, and that's the issue. That's the issue.
Yeah.
You know, so if this squad was at that golden generation level, 2010 level, like I mentioned before, then yeah, that criticism would be worried, would be warranted, because it should be, you know, you'd expect it to kind of definitely at least make an Asian Cup final, for example, but it's just not. Yeah. And, you know, like the thing I would say, some other stuff from Merrick yesterday was, you know, he kind of pointed to Graham Arnold's Sydney FC teams as evidence that, you know, he has the ability to implement a more attacking style. And that's fair, but it's also like, you know, those teams were like by far the best teams on paper in the A-League, right? It's like, you know, if you weren't being able to get the most out of those teams in an attacking sense, like, then like, what are you doing as well? So, you know, you gotta, I'm not, to be fair, we were just talking about Patrick Stormberg before, and I said, you know, like, yeah, you have the tools, but you have to still do it. So, you know, I'm kind of slightly contradicting myself there, but I just mean, if you look at those teams in Asia, those Sydney FC teams that Graham Arnold had, they weren't successful in Asia and they struggled to implement that same style. So that was almost a reverse problem to what the Socceroos have, where against weaker teams, they can't dominate. They can't really, well, they can't kind of create enough. But then against bigger teams, they look way more in control. So it's interesting. And he mentioned, you know, this was a quote from him yesterday. So, we haven't produced the strikers that he needs. It's high on my list that we'll have coaches that know about strikers, how to develop them, and give them a lot more creativity going forward. Now, I don't understand why there was this, like, sole focus on strikers, because we just talked about number 10s. Australia's problem, like, people say, oh, well, what do you mean? Like, Mitch Duke missed three chances against South Korea. That's the issue. And it's like, yeah, I know goal scoring is still an issue with Australia. You got to find the nine. I get it. But our issue is creating. Our issue is tens. We need more creativity. We need to encourage more creativity at a younger level, you know? So then we can have more Riley McGrees in the team. If you got three Riley McGrees in your team, three Ajin Hrustic, whoever it is that creative focal point, then it really doesn't matter who the nine is, because they're going to finish good chances, a high quality of chance, right? So it worried me that, you know, the chief development sort of officer at the FA is kind of seemingly focused on developing more strikers, which I know is important, but I'd be more focused on developing more Riley McGree types, right? Because that for me was really stuck out with the squad during the Asian Cup, was holy shit, we really lack creativity. Like, you know, during the tournament, I was kind of critical of Graham Arnold for playing Jackson Irvine as a number 10. But then in retrospect, you kind of look at it and you think, that's kind of the only way he was going to shoehorn him in the team, and there was really no other number 10 that you could kind of look to and say, yeah, he warrants a start and I can play him in that role. So, yeah. What do you make of that comment, I guess?
Yeah, like, I agree with you. I think simply, it's quite an obvious thing. You know, Australia, we lack technically. I talked to Torge Arslan about it actually, and I was like, you know, what have you sort of found, you know, about Australia, especially some of the younger players? Mm-hmm. And he said, look, physically, unbelievable. You know, like you said, yeah, all of these guys, you know, are almost as strong as me, but technically that's where it's lacking. And I think it's clear to see even on a national level, you know, any level really, you only have a select few really good technical players. So I think that's something that has to become a real emphasis in our game. Just technically brilliant, but also just in tight areas. That's the main thing. You know, if you're playing against a low block, you don't have space. You need to be very good technically and have tight touches. You need to be able to get through tight spaces. And that's something that, you know, maybe isn't as evident in this team, simply enough. You know, you have a McGree. I'd honestly say McGree's that only number 10 in that team. Even a Hrustic, I'd say, is maybe not an out-and-out 10 like that.
Yeah.
In terms of, working those tight spaces, I'd say McGree's the only one in that current squad, which I think is a real concern. We have some players coming through here and there. Well, I'd even say, for example, Alex Robertson or a Volpato, right? Who are players we could bring in. But, they've probably developed those skills overseas, funnily enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's a real sort of, our two players like that, they've played overseas. So I don't know. I think it's really clear, but I don't know. Maybe Merrick sees it differently. I think, we can have better strikers, in any position we can have better players. But I think, like you were saying, I think number 10's the most beaming hole. You even look in the A-League right now. I'm thinking of, maybe a Nisbet is probably, Nisbet. Nisbet would have been the perfect one, actually. I'm thinking about that now. Nisbet defies
exactly coming back to Nisbet. Seriously.
But literally, I think give him a call up and give him a chance. But it goes into something else we're talking about, yesterday in terms of, in the current Socceroos squad, there's not a single player that hasn't played overseas right now, or at least have in the past. And I think that's something that Graham Arnold or just the whole coaching staff as a whole has said, no, simply you have to be playing overseas or have experience to get in the squad. And I don't know, I just think that's very flawed when you see someone like Nisbet, who's so talented. I'll even say in the past, Jake Brimmer was another one like that, probably more of a number 10 that was, won the Johnny Warren medal, and still didn't get a look in. It's really disappointing. So, and they are players like that. So I don't know. I think it's a real gleaming hole, that number 10. I think to really take us to the next level especially against some of these Asian teams that, park the bus essentially against us to unlock them. But I don't know. Do I know more than Ernie Merrick? I'm not sure. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He's a great man. He's been a great coach. But I did think that was a very strange comment, let's say.
Yeah. And then right near the end of the article, he mentioned, the report mentioned that Merrick and FA are preparing to unveil a new 10-year technical plan, which includes an overhaul of Australia's youth development systems and will have the aim of turning the Socceroos into a top 10 team in FIFA's world rankings and lifting the Matildas into the top 5. So, first of all, who cares about world rankings? With all due respect, they're all over the shop the way FIFA does it, and success needs to be weighted in tournaments. And the quality of player that you're producing, that's where the metrics need to be. So again, a little bit worrying that there seems to be a focus on rankings. The other thing is, like, new 10-year technical plan, overhaul youth development systems, like, it's very generic. What specifically?
A lot of specifics in there.
Yeah. Like, how specifically are you going to overhaul youth development systems? What's specifically?
The focus? Yeah.
What's the focus of your 10-year plan? Right. Now they might have those plans and they just don't want to release them yet. Okay. But like, that shit just annoys me, just to be honest with you. It's like new 10-year technical plan. It's like you're just throwing that out there to give people a bone, and it's like without any sort of like. In a couple months, people just forget about that, right? And all of a sudden, it's like it's 6 months' time, and people go, "Wait, didn't Merrick say 6 months ago that they're planning some new 10-year technical plan?" Like, I hope they are, and I hope they've. I'm sure that maybe that's what he's been working on for 18 months. But it's just that kind of generic sort of terms. When the Australian football landscape has a lot of specific things that need, revamping or just a review anyway. It kind of annoys me a little bit. What do you think?
Yeah, it is strange, I think, in that sense. I think we always point to, for example, the Japanese model, and how I think they had a 100-year, was it a 100-year plan they had, or 50 years, something like that? It was a very long-term plan they had in terms of building their football and following it.
Yeah, I mean, 10 years is arguably like not long enough.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's like I don't see Australia getting to a point where, like, obviously, I think the rankings is BS too. I think in terms of top 10, like, what does that really mean? The US is in the top 10 quite a lot, and they're fucking shit. Let's be real. So, I think it's real. They're barely better than us, I think what we really need is a really strong model in terms of a really long-term plan, agreed upon everyone, clear ideals, clear vision, because it's like these small things here and there, like, we're doing this 10-year technical plan we aren't really going into any detail about what it actually means. It's like, you're not really selling anyone with that. So I think it's honestly just a problem with Australian football at the moment. It's just kind of, that's just another sort of reflection on that in terms of a lack of long-term vision, long-term ideas that everyone can really get behind and be like, yeah, okay, let's embrace this. Because we've seen, you know, Japan, you know, when you really get behind it, look how well they're doing now. That they are probably a top 10
nation.
You're
watching that Young Matildas game.
Oh, yeah.
On Wednesday against Japan. Like,
they were
those Japanese players were, like, the technical quality was through the roof. You can see, like, the Young Matildas got some technical quality for sure.
But light years away,
yeah, like, you can still see there was a gap there, big time. Interesting stuff indeed. And the other thing is, like, you know, with the 10-year technical plan, so... what's the State Federation's involvement in this? Is it still going to be FA's doing what they're doing in terms of revamping what their plan is, and State Federations are off doing their own thing, completely, you know, discombobulating the actual national identity and the way everyone should be following? Like, everyone needs to be aligned following whatever FA's direction is, and that's how it needs to work. And I can tell you, because I coach in the junior system here in SA, that's not how it works, right? Everyone's just doing what they want. So, lots to think about. I think for any American FA there, and let's just hope that that's not some bullshit, and that they've actually got some serious plans in place that they can actually execute. All right, Jake, hot work. Looks like I've been talking for about an hour. Good stuff. We hit a lot of topics. We'll be back. Well, I'll be back. I don't know about Jake. on Monday. To talk about this upcoming round of A-League games. Three podcasts. Awesome. For this week. Very, very pumped. We are well and truly back. Jake, anything you want to add before we... you actually mentioned Tolgay Arslan there. Because you've spoken to him recently about a piece that you're working on. Do you want to kind of...
Oh, yeah.
You know, just
a little plug.
Yeah, a little plug, because that'll be out soon.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so I was able to partner with Mizuno, who have really sort of started developing and getting more prevalence in the A-League. You've probably seen some of the best players in the league starting to wear them. Joe Lolly's another one as well.
Wow.
It's been quite unbelievable. Lawrence Thomas as well. Whole list I've talked of, some unbelievable. Yeah, so stay tuned about that. There could be some other sort of stuff coming about there we'll sort of talk about later when that comes about, but so stay tuned with that. It's a really, really good piece, and keep an eye on Mizuno in the market. That's all I'll say.
All right, keep an eye out for that. Make sure you are going to frontpagefootball.net every day when you wake up. Just search it and read whatever's on there. Hopefully there'll be
morning routine.
That's morning routine. Up, make it a part of your morning routine.
Eat breakfast. Bang. Perfect routine.
No, actually get up. First thing you do, go to your computer, front page football. Then get on with your day. All right. And make sure you're following us obviously on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the main ones, also on LinkedIn Threads, and chuck us a follow here on Spotify. Chuck us a review, comments, questions, queries, concerns, let us know. That'll be it for another episode of the Front Page Football Podcast. Until next time, I'm your host, Christian Marchetti, and it is bye for now.